Hey everyone, thank you for joining myself and John here on this week's episode of Investing for Generational Wealth. And today with us here, we have Monique. She's going to talk to us about financial freedom and wealth independence and more. Monique, thank you for taking the time, and if you could introduce yourself and we'll get right into it.
Monique Holm, so excited to be here. Thank you for having me. And I'll be talking about creating multiple income streams and what I call the financial freedom formula. So should I just get going into
it? Yeah, let's get right into
it. All right. I was like, I didn't know we had more questions, but here we go.
Yeah. And then for those who are tuning in, feel free to throw your questions in the Q&A and we'll address them as we go. Or stick around till the end and you can talk to Monique.
Yeah, please do. All right. So I created this presentation. We'll be talking about creating multiple income streams and the financial freedom formula. So basically what we'll cover is four big myths about wealth and financial freedom that keep most people from truly finding it and building it. And then four financial freedom lessons and ultimately the financial freedom formula. And maybe y'all can relate. You'd love to be able to get off the hamster wheel of having to trade your time for money by having passive income streams, but you don't know where to start, right? How do you get to that next level? Or you're an entrepreneur. So I'd love to know more about the audience. So some of you might be entrepreneurs, some of you might be, W-2s, but if you're an entrepreneur who got into business for freedom, but your business relies heavily on you and feels virtually impossible to get off the track, get off the clock. Or maybe if you're working for somebody, you're trading your time for money and you also don't know how to get off that hamster wheel. Or you want your money invested wisely, but you're scared to invest given all the uncertainty in today's world. You're also not sure who you can trust. definitely, that was my story. Just briefly about me. I'm the first generation American. When I was growing up, what I was taught was that, my parents are wonderful. They're from Haiti. They say, Monique, you can be anything you want in parentheses, as long as you're a doctor, lawyer, professor, or engineer. Right? Like that was it. Like, those were my choices. And like, well, I'm not as into the math and sciences, so I guess I'll be a lawyer. Like that's, that was basically how it went. I went down. And so I was a, good student, dutiful daughter, went on to, went to college, Columbia Law School, came out. This is me. I was working. I got a job at a international law firm. I'm here walking to the Tokyo office of that firm, my first firm. And I had this smile on my face in this picture, but I was really miserable. Just to give you a little hint of how miserable, one Tuesday morning, I went to the ER because I was having this excruciating stomach pain. When the doctor told me that I would have to stay in the hospital for 9 days because my appendix had, stay in the hospital. I ended up being there for 9 days. I had my appendix had ruptured. And then he said that I would be at home for at least 30 days afterwards to recover. When he told me that, my first thought was, oh, thank God, I don't have to go to work for at least 30 days. And that was my first thought. Then my next thought was, wait, that's bad, right? Like, no, I was that miserable that being in the hospital with an excruciating life-threatening illness was better than being in the office. So I knew I needed to do something different because I had done everything right. I did the Ivy League grad school, six-figure job, should have been deliriously happy, but I wasn't. And I felt I had loans and I felt like I had golden handcuffs and I needed to find a new way because this path that I was on was literally killing me. They don't know what causes appendicitis. I'm sure it was stress. It was literally killing me. So I needed to find something else. And it wasn't a, smooth one-shot journey, but I ended up falling into real estate as one of those paths. The only thing I'd ever been taught about real estate was that at some point you should buy a house. And the plan I got was you go to school, you get the best job you can, you buy the car and the house, you work until you're 65, 70, you get the gold watch, you play golf, you die. Like that was the story I got. And at some point I was like, okay, I guess I need to buy a house. But I live in Los Angeles, which is a super expensive market. And this is back in 2005, and a starter home was upwards of $500,000, $600,000. And I was making okay money, but not that much money. So I ended up basically house hacking. So I got a property. I lived in one unit. There was an upstairs that had a 2-bedroom unit. It was a back house that had a that had been com oh, it was like a converted garage. That was another 1-bedroom. And then we rent out our basement. And I was like, oh, snap, these people are paying my mortgage. It was awesome. And then I met my husband who had a duplex, and we got married in 2007. And then I was pregnant, and I had my boss at the time. I ended up like trying to find different firms to work for, but my boss at the time, I had like told him the week before that I was expecting, and then he called me in. I thought I was going to get a bonus because I've been working so hard. But so I got fired when I was like 5 months pregnant. And anyway, then that when I thought, okay, I'll just wait until after I give birth, then I'll take a short maternity period, try to find a new job. And then my daughter was born in late August of 2008. And within a month of her birth, like the markets were in free fall. It was like a terrible time to find a job. And it was a blessing in disguise because, ultimately, what I ended up doing was falling into real estate. We had a duplex at that time that we sold. We ended up flipping houses. We ended up creating, and then I learned about commercial real estate and bringing groups of investors together. And I started to grow that and create multiple income streams through primarily through real estate initially. So, and my first year of partnering with others to build to in this commercial realm, ended up getting a 109-unit mobile home park, 318 units in Dallas, 514 in Atlanta, and then a 77, 51 unit apartments in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So through this like power of real estate, partnering with other people, got over 1,000 doors in 1 year. And I've since grown that portfolio and have expanded into other realms and learned to diversify. And then I've also then I got a download at some at one of these. I think I was at a conference. And I just got a download. Bring, especially like women, because there were no women that I was saying, but bring women into this realm. Like share this real estate with others. And so the written some books and podcast and created my business, Real Estate Investor Goddesses. My big mission, my big why is to help people find financial freedom so that they're never in in the situation like I was. One, feeling like you have to be in a job that is literally killing you in order to live, or just feeling completely stuck because you don't have control, you lose your job, and all of a sudden you're in this really tumultuous place. So my big why is to help, share this this message of how do you build wealth, how do you build financial freedom, how do you build that financial security. Let's talk about like what is wealth, what is financial freedom as I defined, and how do we create it. So wealth can be defined as what you own minus what you owe, right? Your net worth. Fortunately, there are a lot of people that have a negative net worth, right? If you've gone to school and like when I got out of law school, I had a negative net worth, a six-figure negative net worth. And it took a while to climb out of that hole, right? So wealth is what you own minus what you owe. And our goal is to like grow that. But I think also wealth means having enough to spend, save, invest, give away to live the lifestyle you want, right? That's how we're defining wealth. And wealth and financial freedom is having enough passive income that you don't need to work, right? And when your passive income equals or exceeds your expenses, at that point, you have financial freedom. There's different levels, right? There's the, here are my expenses, here's my current lifestyle. Once you have a passive income that exceeds that, that's financial freedom. And then you have like, this is the baller life I would like to live. How much does that cost? And then being able to pay for that with passive income, that's sort of next level. But how I'm defining it is, whatever your current, where your lifestyle is now, how much that costs you every month, having passive income that equals, exceeds that, that will be financial freedom. That's your financial freedom number. So why is knowing how to build wealth important? I think these are terrible statistics, but they're true. 57% of American adults have less than $1,000 in savings. 40% have less than $400. That means that, there's like more than half of the country are really like pink slip, one severe medical emergency, one bad car accident away from financial devastation. So I think probably most of you who are on this, who are here today, that's not you. And just the fact that you're here makes me think that's very not likely to be you. But if you're not yet at that place of financial freedom, then how do you get there? And then for those of you who are entrepreneurs, this is, I think, even more dire, right? There are, the vast majority of businesses earn less than $100,000 a year. And most businesses are in this like feast or famine cycle. Most entrepreneurs, particularly bad for, women entrepreneurs who earn only 77% of what men earn, and tend to pay themselves 28% less. So it's very important if you're an entrepreneur to get this, but wherever you are, whether you're employed, you're a W-2, or you work for yourself, it's important that you know how you build this. So let's talk about some of the myths about financial freedom and the things that keep many people from actually achieving it. One myth is that you have to work really, really hard to have wealth and financial freedom. Like you're gonna have to work around the clock, burn the candle at both ends. And that is a myth, because ultimately financial freedom is about passive income. It's about not having to trade your time for money and being able to free your time. So that is it's the opposite. But a lot of people don't even want to go there because they think, oh my gosh, I don't want to have to work that hard. So that's one of the myths. Myth two is that you can no longer have Starbucks, right? Like you have to, like the way to get there is to like scrimp and save, like just like tighten your belt to like cut everything out of your life, make your, you know, like Yeah, if your expenses are so low, then it's not a very high bar to have passive income that exceeds your expenses. But there's more than just like having the passive income that exceeds your expenses. It's about having the lifestyle that you want, right? So, and most of the time, it's not $4 a day that's going to make the difference in your being able to create this lifestyle that you want. It's about making smarter investments, and so it's the, I think you can build this and still have your lattes and your macchiatos or whatever. Just making smarter decisions. Myth three is that all debt is bad, and there's definitely we don't want to, I think, be using debt to for our shoe collection and have more clothes, but using leverage in a very targeted way. So being able to borrow money at a certain level and being able to use it to make more money is a tool that that is you can use to build wealth. So it's the type of leverage that you have. Debt is unfortunately not as inexpensive as it was a few years ago. It's gone up, but it's still in a bit not it's sort of like around the historical average right now. And there is you can use and you're borrowing at 7% to buy an asset that can make you 12, 15%. And you, that is how you can use debt to build wealth. And myth four is that to be wealthy means you have to have a big house and a fancy car. The more money you make, the bigger your house, the fancier your car. So that just because on the outside, like things that you have are expensive, that's often not the path to building wealth either. So it is, wealth is really about having your assets that are making you money and like buying things that make you money, as opposed to buying, things that are very fancy. Eventually, what you do is you, when you have those assets making you money and enough money, then that can go towards the fancy houses and cars and clothes and trips and jets and all that stuff. But that's not where you start. And usually going that route is what keeps people from building financial freedom. So let's talk about how we do it then. So there are four lessons for financial freedom. Lesson one is you want to create multiple income streams, mostly passive, and reinvest your gains. So most of us are taught, this was definitely what I was taught. It's like the one you get a job. You get the best job you can, but you get a job, right? So if you look at, I have this metaphor of financial security as a table, and the income is the legs of your table. So most people, we have a table and we're taught to have one leg, our job. That's our one stream of income that's holding up our table. It's fine. And, people will say, well, get the best, strongest, thickest leg you can, right? Under your table, get a good job. But what happens if you get fired or you get sick or, something happens, then there goes your leg, there goes your table crashing down. And it's not very secure. I definitely experienced that in my life. And I know that there are many of us that have that too. And that is not security. But that is what we're taught, like that one-legged table. Or maybe, or some people will say, yeah, actually, I have two jobs and or three jobs. So I have more legs under my table, which is true. But if all those legs rely on you, then if you can't work, if something happens to you, there goes your table. So we want to have tons of legs, right? You want so many legs on your table that if one leg goes, then you have all these other legs, and you want so that most of the legs under your table are not you trading your time for money. Most of those legs under your table are passive incomes. And talk in a moment about what passive income means, but there are different ways of getting passive income. But ultimately, it's you not trading your time for money, which is where you want to live to be in financial freedom. Probably a lot of you might have heard of Robert Kiyosaki, who wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad, also the Cash Flow Quadrant. And the Cash Flow Quadrant is it's a way of looking at where does your money come from, right? Where is your cash flow coming in from? So E is an employee, right? So when you're an employee, you have a employer, a job, they pay you that money. That's where your cash is coming from. It is one source, and it can be a good way to start, and you can take some of that money and put it in other places, but that's that job. When you are an employee, you tend to not have you're paying taxes on that income. There are no real tax benefits, and you're kind of at the mercy of your employer, right? If they keep you or not keep you, that is that you're it's not that's where that comes from. So that's an E. S is when you are self-employed, right? So you maybe you're a doctor or CPA with your own practice. Or you have your clients. You're still trading your time for money, but you have more control over that time. You're still paying plenty of taxes when you're in the S, but that the E and the S, you are trading your time for money, right? And the B, that is when you have a business owner. So the difference between somebody who's self-employed and a business owner is the business owner has E's. They have employees, and their employees are working and making them money, right? So if you have a business, you don't have to be working in the business. You can be you're the business owner, and you have employees that are working your business. So that's what a and there are all sorts of great tax benefits from being a business owner and helping create jobs for other people. So you have you tend to make more money but pay less taxes. And then I is investor. So that's when your money is coming from investments. And as an I, you that can that those investment dollars can be invested in a variety of different things, but again, that money is coming very passively when you're in the I. So on the right side of the quadrant, the B and the I, that's more passive income. The E and the S, you're more trading your time for money. So to get to wealth and financial freedom, you want to focus your like bring getting more and more cash flow from that right side of the quadrant, from the business or investments. Now, when you're talking about business, whatever you love to do, figure out how to build a business around it, because having a business will allow you to 10x, 100x, or 1000x what you'd otherwise make as an employee or just doing it. So if there's something that you love, like one of the wonderful ways to build more freedom is to put a business around it. You love to surf, go to surf school or own the one of the things I love to travel and have retreats. I'm actually in the process of buying a retreat center right now in Mexico, putting a business around that. So those are businesses. Now let's talk about different types of investments. So one of the ones I love is real estate, right? Buying property. And when I put in a tenant into a property and they're paying rent, what after expenses are paid, what we have left, it's like passive cash flow. It comes in whether I'm sleeping, on vacation, working another job, doing something else, that will come in. So real estate is something that I'm obviously a big fan of. Another way of investing is actually to invest in and create intellectual property. So having intellectual properties with my books, right? So when somebody buys my book, I worked on it once, publish it. Whenever somebody buys it, I get money from that, right? So you can create intellectual property. My son is a musician. I'm gonna brag. He's won 2 Grammys. Very cool. But when his music, like people are playing his songs, any of the songs that he's produced or written or you're done, right? He makes money. So I live in LA, Hollywood, right? Movies, anything. That's intellectual property. And then a business. So investing in businesses or invest in that through stocks, right? You can invest in businesses. So those are some types of investments that will help you create passive income stream. Now we'll talk about because I'm a particular fan of real estate. I want to focus on how real estate in particular can help you build financial freedom. So one is this passive cash flow, right? So like I said, when you have a tenant who's in there, they're paying rent after expenses. It's just cash flow that's coming in, and it's fairly passive. So yeah, just a note about this passive cash flow. It does require some work on the front end, right? It does require work to set it up, and there might actually be some work to do throughout, right? So I have, it's a property. Maybe once a year, or a couple, like the tenant will call and say, "Hey, I have an issue with blah blah blah," and then we write up. So most of my property that we have property managers that are handling these things, but I do have a couple that I self-manage, and there is some work there, right? But it's fairly minimal. But that's passive cash flow. Then this is a huge one, are the tax benefits. So I didn't realize how good this part was at first, and I have a friend who's a very successful business owner. Found himself owing $500,000 to the IRS 1 year, right? Ouch, right? He had a 500K bill. And then he learned about the benefits of real estate. He bought an apartment building in Memphis. Now, the apartment building was making 6 figures a year. So it was making money. But because of the way the tax code is structured, I won't go into the how it works. But just buying this apartment building helped bring his tax bill from 500,000 to zero. 500,000 to zero. So it's not just what you make that matters, it's what you get to keep. And so real estate really helps you keep more. So even though he's making 6 figures from the building, he also saved 500,000. And real estate, so oftentimes, like our taxes are very low. My taxes are very low legally, but just because of the way the tax code is structured. Leverage. So when I was talking earlier about debt and being able to use debt to build wealth. So if I want to get $100,000 worth of stocks, I'm gonna have to put $100,000 into a brokerage account and buy that stock. If I want $100,000 property, right, I can put 20% down, 10% down, 5%, sometimes 0% down, and be able to acquire a property. So there you can use leverage with real estate and be making money off of OPM, other people's money that whoever's lending you that money. Principal pay down. So if you use leverage, you have a mortgage or some debt on that property, your tenants, as they're paying their rent, that's going to pay down the principal of your property. So you have this loan, but it's the rent that actually pays it down, which is making you money. and there's appreciation and growing your net worth. So over time, real estate tends to appreciate. So it'll be worth more over time, just naturally through the market. But you can also do what we call forced appreciation, right? So targeted rehabs. And so we had a problem last year. It was a duplex that had one of the units had two bedrooms, but one of the bedrooms was really large. So spent about $8,000 to make two that one very large bedroom into two bedrooms. And that $8,000 investment made that property worth $50,000 more. As a three bedroom, it was worth that much more than as a two bedroom. And so that was type of forced appreciation, right? And the more your net worth is like what you own minus what you owe. So as appreciation, the equity grows in your building, so does your net worth. Refinance. So real estate allows you can do a cash out refinance. So, when you have that equity, you can take out a loan and pull that equity out. It's not a taxable occurrence. It doesn't cost, you're not going to pay taxes on that money that you pull out. And you can use that to buy more real estate. And I love it because it's sort of like, I think of it as a money tree. You're able to like take out this harvest and replant those seeds. And my goal is for all of you to have a money orchard, just orchard of money trees, just giving you more cash. And then retirement savings. So you can, a lot of people didn't, re I didn't realize this till I got into commercial, that you can use your retirement account sometimes to buy real estate. So I just thought I was limited to that, the list of mutual funds and bonds that my employer had told me, but you can self-direct your retirement accounts and use that towards buying real estate, which will help you have more till it can grow at a much faster pace often than other types of investments, and it'll help you grow your retirement and diversify. And it's a feel-good business because there's a ripple effect of good and prosperity, right? When you're buying a business or buying a real estate and you're helping a seller, and then the agents and the insurance and the contractors and the tenants and the property man, like it's just everybody can benefit. And part of my mission is I want to invest where I can, only where I can leave a property and a community better than I found it. So it's really about, being able to do good by doing well. So I don't know, I'd love to know in the chat, like which of the benefits are you most excited about? Like I kind of like all of them, but so but there, it's just there's a lot of reasons why I think real estate is a smart ploy, a smart move to get to help you build that financial freedom. Okay, so rule two is you want to invest wisely and take advantage of compounding interest. And so the rule of 72 is how many years of compound interest it will take to double your money. So the number of years equals 72 divided by the rate of return. So if your rate is 1% in the bank account, right? So it would take you 72 years to double your money. A lot of people have their money sitting in accounts making less than 1% right now. That's a many, many, many years in order to get there. All right. So the higher the rate, if it's 10, even 10%, it'll take you 7.2 years, right? So just how many years will it take to double your money? Like we said, 50,000 a bank account at 1% interest. That would take you, how long do you think it would take? I already gave that math. It would take 72 years. If you had your money in a bank account at 1% for 20 years, you would have $11,009.50. And a lot of times that we're taught, well, I was like, just stick your money in the bank account. And that's the safest thing you can do, is save it and put it in the bank account. That is not a good strategy for getting to financial freedom and building wealth. That 72 per, at 1% will take you 72 years. A stock market, the average 7% return on investment, how long it would take you to double, right? If you over 20 years at 7%, you would make $143,484. And if it's like just compounding, but you know, stocks are not straight up and down. So you want to make sure you buy low, sell high. And so at 70, at 7%, if you're going to do the math, how long would it take you to double your money? It would take 10.29 years. So, and then with real estate, let's say you get a two, three, two single family homes in Cleveland, Ohio for 100,000 each. So 200,000 in assets, putting down 25% on each, renting it out for 1550 a month. And oh, I don't know why that says the five. Sorry. I'm like, that math is a little odd, but just over a year, right? If you had for per unit. You would, or for both, you'd get 1167 per month of cash flow, or 14,000 a year. So it's like factoring in all your various expenses over 20 years, your return, assuming a 3% increase in rent a year, 3% increase in expenses, this is what you could profit. So, and then another example is an apartment syndication. So a group of investors coming together to purchase an apartment. Let's say you put 50,000 in. This was, I rounded some numbers from a deal we did at with purchased at 5 million, the 5% interest rate, where we took, we had a loan for 75% of the value. The returns, you know, after 5 years, so 101,000 or 51,575 profit. So that's one deal, about 20% interest. So at 20% interest, how long will it take to double your money? So about 3.6 years. So lesson, so those are, you want to invest. Lesson two is to buy assets, not liabilities. So assets put money into your pocket. Liabilities take money out of your pocket. And so we're often taught that you know, the house that you buy, the car that you buy is an asset. Now, unless you are also renting it out, or using your car for Uber or something like that, or what's that one where at Turo, where you like somebody comes and takes your car and rents it and brings it back? It's a liability. I ever want to think about that. So we want to be investing in assets, things that are putting money back into your pocket, that's giving you passive income, right? That's how you're going to build wealth and financial freedom. So that's the lesson two. Lesson three is you want to learn how to leverage and use debt wisely. You can borrow money for investment purposes, you know, like, and an investment in yourself can be one of your best investments. I think that's a Warren Buffett quote. But you avoid using debt for liabilities and due debts, right? So you're not, don't use debt for liabilities, use debt for assets that'll make money. And that is a way that you can more quickly build wealth, right? You can leverage that. And lesson four is you want to have a wealth and financial freedom mindset. So David Shermer said, wealth is a mindset. It is all about how you think. Money is literally attracted to you or repelled from you. your thoughts. Very important. Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, says, if you do not see great riches in your imagination, you will never see them in your bank balance. So it's really important that you have thoughts and mindset that are in alignment with building wealth. Right? So for a lot of people, they think of wealth or the wealthy, and they think, wealth, the 1% or the wealthy or greedy or they're this or they're that. And if you have any of that going on, when you think about money as being the root of all evil or anything like that, it will not come to you or stay with you. Right? You're going to be limited in the amount that you will allow yourself to have because there's a negative mental association around money. So it's very important that whatever is there, you clean it up so that you can allow it. Because I think, you know, personally, it's like good people with money can do a lot of good. You know, Mother Teresa said it takes a checkbook to change the world. Money is a tool that can be used for a lot of good. And in the hands of really good-hearted people, it's a wonderful thing. But it's a tool, like any tool. And my goal is that you allow it in so that you can create financial freedom and you can do what you were born in this world to do. Because that's what it'll allow you when you have the time and the money to do that. So ultimately the financial freedom formula is multiple income streams times compound interest, times leverage, times mindset. Okay, so all of those four things is what will help you to build and create financial freedom. Right? So getting that through multiple income streams, mostly passive, with compounding interest, leverage, and mindset will get you there. And that is all I have. So I'm going to stop sharing, see if there are any questions about anything talked about.
Thanks for the presentation, Monique. I don't, nothing from the audience at least. A curiosity that I have, the retirement savings option that you had mentioned. So for those in the audience who don't know, Monique was referring to self-directed IRAs. Are there particular investments that you favor, you should use your self-directed IRA for, while there are others where you would prefer just to invest using cash?
Yeah, good question. I'm going to preface this by saying I am not a self-directed retirement account like expert, but this is what I've learned. Because a lot of our investors do use self-directed retirement accounts. They can be self-directed IRAs or 401ks. So they're look into that. That a lot of times the 401ks are better for a variety of reasons, but not everyone can have one. But generally, those are wonderful for like really passive investments that you're not getting a direct benefit from. So if you were going to, if you wanted to use to get say like a vacation rental with your retirement account and you want to be able to use it sometimes, you cannot do that. That's a disallowed. You can't use it. And it, I think it's you, neither you nor anyone down your line. So you, your kids, your parents, no, we can, but I think a nephew can, but you know, generally if you're going to be touching it and you also, you might, it's disallowed if even you're doing work on it, like painting it and doing things. So you can collect rents. You get there. It's very, you can use it for investments, but you just have to be a little careful. So the more hands-off you can be on that type of investment. So it's perfect for syndications, very, very passive investments. If you're going to be more active on that one, then it's generally safer if you're using your own, you know, funds outside of a retirement account.
Do you have specific types of investments that you favor? Like maybe like syndications for self-directed IRAs, but maybe not buying single-family home rentals, or maybe you don't want to, use it to invest into lending someone money to, go flip a house, anything like that.
So lending it to somebody else, so private money lending, a lot of people use their investment accounts for that, putting it into a syndication, buying a turnkey properties, and something that you're not really managing or going to be touching, somebody else is doing the work. All of that's perfect. So just if it's hands off, then those are perfect for self-directed investments.
And for those in the audience who are wondering, I was going to say before we move off the topic, it's usually the process is if you have a Roth IRA or a 401k from a previous employer, look into converting it into a self-directed IRA. And your typical your current 401k typically won't allow you to do that, but always worth a check.
If it's your current employer and you're usually you have to stay within their system.
Yeah, I was going to ask. We have a lot of attendees that are either experienced or maybe some attendees that are not experienced with real estate investing at all. And so, is there in the spectrum of asset classes that are good for inexperienced versus experienced investors? Or maybe are there paths to, I mean, it's all ideally it's all passive, but are there paths to on their journey, either start with a syndication, be an LP, be passive, and then maybe think about migrating to a more active role, in their journey. What have you found?
It's a good question. So real estate investing is not one size fits all. There are a lot of different paths and that'll be right for people. And depending on what the right path is, it'll vary. Like, what's your end goal? What are you going for? Is it, so if it's somebody that wants to have to create a lot of cash flow now, maybe they're more looking long-term in their retirements, or they want the tax benefits, or they're looking to build a legacy, for their family and community, or it's some combination of that. It'll vary. Your path will vary a little bit, and then it's a com and then how do you want to play? So some people love the idea of finding a getting a ugly duckling property and fixing it up and like getting dirty and picking paint colors and all that stuff. Other people are like, no, never want to do that. Don't even want to touch anything like that. And some people, they want their money to go off and come back with friends. They don't want to have to do any of this. And other people would just geek out on like looking at numbers and analyzing deals, right? So it kind of depends on how you want to play in terms of what you do. Anything you want to do, there's a way to do it, but you'll probably need to, you might, you'll need to partner with other people. You either need to get some education to get you to do it, or partner with other people who have that experience, or who have the money you lack, or who have the time that you lack, whatever you want to do, it's possible. There are certain things that most like a lot of beginners tend to, so it's fairly low barrier to entry. I mean, if you have the money to do a passive, like to, passively invest in a syndication, there's not that much to do once you feel comfortable. You just need to be able to vet the deal and the whoever's, the team. If you feel comfortable enough, that's a fairly easy, and low bar to get in. Other people may love that idea, but not have the funds. And so they may want to be doing something a little more active, like wholesaling or some other things where they can get the money to then do more passive things down the line. So it will really vary based off of who, what resources somebody has and what they want to do and where they want to go.
Right. We did get a question in from Amanda. Amanda asks, do you find that women are more risk averse in the financial freedom realm? How do you overcome fear of failure?
That's a great question. And yes, as a rule, women are more fearful when it comes to investing. There have been studies. So with men tend to look at investments as a challenge, as a game. Women were predisposed to look at it as a threat. And so it does bring up more fear for us. And you know, being able to overcome that fear is something that I focus on a lot in, you know, with my community because of that. That being said, women tend to, and maybe it's in part because of that, once we get in the game, we tend to do better, in part because we're more likely to ask for help, seek expert guidance, and we are more likely to take more measured decisions. So we don't move as fast, but they tend to be more thought out and reasoned and with expert guidance. So on average, women have better, you know, 20-30% better returns in this when they do it than men. But they're not as likely to get started because of that fear. So you know, overcoming it in part is it helps to have support. It helps to have a community. It helps to, you know, not do it alone. And then to get educated, because the more you learn, the more confident you become. Yeah. Any other questions?
You did a pretty good job of covering it all. I'm trying to think if any come to mind.
So what are your next steps in terms of, are you still going the syndication route? It sounds like you have 1,000 doors. You're expanding to 15 states. Very, very impressive. No stats. What are your next steps in terms of your passive income journey? Mm-hmm. Is it acquiring more properties? Is it mentoring? Is it all of that, all of the above and more?
Yeah, all of the above and more. So I am, I've been focused the past few years a lot more on industrial. So we're doing multifamily, but we moved into industrial in 2019, still do some multifamily. This year, I'm really excited. We're moving international. So we're getting we just got under contract for a retreat center in Mexico. And which I'm super excited about. So we're really into diversification, but definitely we syndicate. I love to bring other investors along on the ride. And, you know, it's just a way for everybody to benefit.
Do you find that your journey is manifested by passion projects? So it sounds like the retreat in Mexico might be a passion project versus industrial. I don't know how I'm passionate you are industrial. Do you find that more and more that, you know, there are projects that interest you?
Yeah. So I do sort of love the industrial in part because they're triple net. So triple net, for those who don't know, like with the regular lease, right? You put in a tenant, they'll pay rent, but you'll usually pay the other expenses, property tax, insurance, things like that. Triple net, in this case, we have industrial, where you'll have a commercial tenant and they'll pay, rent, plus they pay all the property taxes, they pay all the insurance, they pay all the maintenance and repairs, right? So if there's an issue with the toilets, they fix the toilets. If there's an issue with the roof, they fix the roof. And our tenants are, you know, 8-9 figure businesses that have been around for a long time. They just, it's so gloriously easy. I'm a big fan of those, of our industrial, not in the same way that I'm a fan of this retreat center in Mexico, where I'm like super excited to spend time and, you know, build that out. So I like different investments for different reasons. Like our multifamily, I love that too, and like fixing them up and having the change, the shift, and in the units and the building. So I like geek out on all sorts of real estate. So I like it all. That's my problem. I'm a little bit like, I get too interested in all of it, but I've sort of set myself up. So I will partner with other people that are doing more of the operation, so I can play in a lot of different playgrounds and not have to focus too much more on the fundraising side. And you know, I get to own them, and not, it's more like the business as opposed to like working in the business.
Right. Do we have any other questions? From Monique. I remember, so I spent about 10 years in LA and thought that, I mean, similar to you, like 500, 400,000, this was like a long time ago, and just thought it was too expensive at the time. And this is like a single residence. And I deeply regret it now, but do you ever find that living in LA that, yeah, I mean, I don't know how much investment you make in LA proper, but you know, with investing in 15 other states, I'm sure that you find investing in other states possibly, you know, much more viable than in California.
Yep, sure. LA is very expensive, and it's also very, very tenant friendly, which right. is great when you're a tenant. Not so great when you're a landlord. So we tend to invest in more landlord friendly spots where the cost is, you're going to get more return. So in LA, I was super excited when I was breaking even. You know, it's like, yeah, I didn't lose money. Like this month, like starting to make a little teen bit. I was like, I didn't know what cash flow was until I found out that you can invest in other markets. I was like, what is, like, I just thought it was an appreciation game. So it's definitely better investing outside.
Well, John, I mean, as you know, the old saying goes, the best time to buy real estate was 20 years ago. Next best time is now. So
yeah, if you buy now, you're able to buy now, and you're like 15 years later, 10 years, you'll be like, people will be like, God, I wish I'd bought back in 24 when I, you know. After the 2008, you know, we started to flip, I'm kind of kicking myself for selling those as opposed to keeping them, because they are worth a lot more now. But I didn't know at the time. I just, real estate investing to me is what I saw on HGTV, and I saw flip shows. So that's what I thought you did. Like, yes. It took me a minute to learn that, oh, wait, you keep these, right? That makes sense. So, you live, you learn.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time, Monique, to come and speak to our audience today. We'll, like I mentioned, this will be up on YouTube and all the major podcasting platforms. We'll include your contact information in there as well, and folks can reach out to you that way.
Yeah, please do. This was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, to you and to everyone listening. And that's it for this week's episode of Investing for Generational Wealth.